Hello everyone, it's Chris Hall here from Charity Digital, the organisation that helps other charities be more digital. Today, we have a special podcast for you. In March, we had over 400 charity professionals join us at Olympia London for a day of learning, knowledge sharing and connecting. We managed to record all of the 22 sessions from the day, and we'll be releasing them as bonus podcasts throughout the series to help share some of the amazing conversations we were having on the day. If you want to keep up to date with all our upcoming podcasts and events, like and subscribe the podcast through your usual podcast provider and sign up for Charity Digital updates at charitydigital.org.uk. Enjoy the pod.
My name is Claire Tavernier. I am the room host for this room. So I've decided to call, this is going to be my new greeting now. So hi, so we can't shake hands. We have a number of absolutely brilliant sessions lined up in this room. This is going to be the best room. Just to be very clear, this is where you want to be. Don't go anywhere after this. But we are opening with a really fantastic session from Charity Water and Ellie Schooler.
Did I do this right?
Excellent. I practice. Ellie Schooler is comes from actually the film and TV world and has worked in that world for many years before joining Charity Water about a year ago and bringing all of that brilliant experience in storytelling and content to the charity. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about how digital storytelling and authenticity can drive growth for the charity sector. So I think, look at that. That's amazing. I've never seen a room so they should have given us the best, the biggest room. I knew it. I'm going to complain. It's going to be brilliant. We have about half an hour of presentation. There will be questions. There'll be time for questions at the end. Not that much, so think very hard about your questions. As with the auditorium, we will ask you to stand up. And in fact, in order to save time, if you have questions, can you go and stand up and sort of line up at the mic? And we'll try to get to, I'm assuming there'll be lots of questions because there's many of you. We'll try to go to as many as possible in the time that we have. But without further ado, Ellie.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. There, if anyone wants to sit down at the front, there is loads of room down here if you want to, up to you guys. Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming. We always start our presentations with a big thank you. Yes, I'm Ellie. I work for Charity Water. I lead on all brand experience within the UK and EU. So what I'm going to do today is tell you guys a little bit about who we are, what we do, how we do it, how we are founded. And then I'm going to give you a few examples of sort of storytelling moments that we've had throughout the years and how that has driven to our growth. And then I would love to hear from you guys. Any questions? So this is the whole reason that we were started, is because there's 785 million people living without access to clean water across the world. This is the big number that we are constantly striving towards. And the reason is that water has some horrific different types of diseases within it. Bilharzia, trachoma, dysentery, cholera. Some of the diseases I hadn't even heard of before I started working for Charity Water. One in 10 people across the globe are living without access to clean water. And we say that 9 in 10 people have the ability to help us to solve that problem. So how do we do it? We're pretty solution agnostic. We kind of go into an area and we say, okay, what do we need to do here to make this work for you guys? Currently working across 20 active countries means that you have different topographies, geographies, different types of soil. So every single place needs a different solution. So we aren't focused on what the solution might be. We're just focused on solving that problem. Whether we're in Nepal, where we're looking at lots of pipe fed systems, which are because it's so hilly, or perhaps because we're in Ethiopia, where it's got a really dense soil, so we are doing big drilling rigs, which are really expensive. And this is why we're doing it, because we want to provide clean water. For every pound that we see put into clean water, we see a 4 to 8, and it's actually now been estimated at 4 to 12 pound economic growth. And I think that's really at the heart of everything, is that if you provide clean water to someone, that you are changing so many aspects of their life. And this is what we love about it, and it really enhances our storytelling, because we aren't just saying, this is clean, we've now made it clean. We're actually saying, look at this community, look how they are now got more children being educated, you've got more women running their own businesses, you've got more men going to work. It has an effect on so many different aspects of people's lives. So for us, clean water is a fundamental, a human right, and fundamental to make any kind of economic change within a community. it's a big issue for women and children, and it's a real feminist issue. So in Africa alone, as a continent, women walk 40 billion hours on average a year to get dirty water. That's a huge amount of your time spent going to get this horrible water source that's going to cause all these sorts of health issues for your family. And for us, that's such an integral part of the time aspect, that we're giving these women their time back. And actually, as an interesting fact off of that, you see that there is one of the largest proportions of female entrepreneurs is in the continent of Africa, because these women have had to think on their feet about how they create their own businesses and how they're going to provide for their families. Now, this is what's really important to us, is it's a solvable problem. We have the wherewithal in which to make this change in these communities. We just need the support from our community to make that happen. And we're really, and you'll see this throughout all of the storytelling I'll tell you about, we're all about hope. We're hope over guilt in every single way. We're always, it's a solvable problem. This is how we do it. If you help me and we come together, this is how we're going to change it. I think that's really integral to our values and how we communicate with our audience. So this is our motto, water changes everything. My slides have been a bit slumped up. I don't know why it's done that. I'm going to go to this one. So we were founded back in 2006 by this guy called Scott Harrison. He used to run nightclubs in New York City, not the most natural place to start from a charity organisation. He was living quite a debaucherous life, and in 2006 at Punta del Este on New Year's Eve, he had a bit of a realisation that if he continued on the same trajectory, he was probably going to die before he saw his 30th birthday. So he decided to see what it would look like to walk in completely the opposite direction. So he sold everything he owned, his DVDs, which is a bit of a sign of the time. He always has DVDs. I'm like, that's a bit old now, isn't it? Sold all his DVDs and then emailed a load of different charities and said, who will take me? I'd love to come and work for you guys. And everyone was like, no way, you're not coming near us. One organisation said, oh, all right, if you pay us $300 a month, you can come with us and you can be involved in showing us what we're doing. So he went to the coast of Africa, and he was recording, doing some media recording for people looking at different kinds of diseases that people were having across the continent of Africa. And as a result of that, he saw how much of the health issues were stemming straight from water. And he said, well, this is what we need to change. He saw these really dangerous and dirty water sources. So he said, that's the issue that I want to solve. This is what I want to do. And he said, right, came back to New York and said, I need to create a charity that really has some kind of change on this. What can we do to make that different? So he founded Charity Water, and he was like, we need to really disrupt the sector in order to make a change, in order to solve that big 785. So these are the three main pillars of Charity Water: 100% model, proof, and our local partners. So 100% model means that 100% of all donations go straight to the work we do. And we're able to do this because we have a separate bank account called The Well. And we have 134 very, very generous philanthropists who have decided to specifically support our operational costs, whether that be my salary, my Mac, my travel to anything, my pay, my little tiny studio in Boxall, anything like that. Those philanthropists have said, we'll cover that so that you can go out to the public and say 100% of your money is going straight to this. As a result, it means that we are really obsessed with proof. We think proof is totally in the pudding. We were founded in the same year as Google Maps, and Scott went, okay, well, we're going to be transparent about our financials. Let's be transparent about where our projects are. People gawked a bit and were like, oh, this is a bad idea. What if people try going to it? Reality is, people are pretty unlikely to try and get to it. You can now go onto our website, and you can scroll into it, and you can spend hours on here, because since 2006, we've done nearly 200,000 different projects. So you could be here for quite a while going through them once. But what's great is you can see who the implementing partner was, you can see who gave it, and the GPS coordinates. So someone gives to a well, they get given this reporting cycle where they can see exactly where their money has gone. We're also developing a sensor program, which is one of the first in its times, which we developed with Google. And we are looking at what we can do to improve the water flow within a country. So we said, if we're going to be sustainable, we're going to be really transparent, we've got to accept that sometimes these things break. And we need to be able to ensure that we are fixing them as quickly as possible. How can we do that? Okay, we put a sensor on it, and then we can measure the sensor data. It has opened up a host of issues with how you track the water flow, which I won't go into now, but it's a really interesting project, and it's now been going for about 3 to 4 years, a project we thought was going to take us a year and then we'd implement. No. It's been quite fantastic to understand more about how when you put a water sensor on a pump, that isn't a regular water flow, so we've had a lot of difficulties with that. But it's an ongoing example of how we are trying to be as transparent and sustainable and saying, when we've got a problem, we're going to fix it, and this is how we're going to technologically solve the issue we have at hand. And our third and final pillar is our local partners. These people are integral. They are the foundation for our work. We don't go in as charity water to these organizations, to these countries to bring water. We work through grant partners. And this is a difficult, but it's the best way for us to ensure that the water projects are community-led, bottom-led, that they are creating water communities where they are creating infrastructure around that water point in order to sustain it. Some communities decide to put a small fee on it when they come along. They say, okay, you're going to pay a small amount of money to use our taps on so that we then have a bank of money if something goes wrong that we can then fix it, or we can call for help or get something for. So our water programs team, who work in the ops team, they spend a huge amount of time creating infrastructures within these grant partners, from showing them how to run good accounting to how to do a good audit. And we spend a lot of time and money from our operational side to ensure that those things are being led really well. So all of this was under the guise from Scott of saying, right, well, we've got to reinvent charity. So those are the three pillars of what we're trying to do and how we're going to do it. But we really want to shake up the market and say, why isn't charity sexy? He sat in New York in 2006 and was like, I've been running nightclubs. None of my friends give to charity. No one really knows about it or thinks it's got any kind of appeal, brand appeal in any way. Why is that? Why are we not engaging people and young people and people who like, you know, we're all human. Everyone has these causes that they care about, but there's this sort of lack of connection between that and the charity world. So he said, you know, we all know this. So why can't we know this too? And that was really the foundation of the thinking behind Charity Water, is why can't we be an iconic brand that people can associate and understand? So in the early days, we went for a really, simple, clean type of branding. It was very much in your face across New York cabs. You know, you wouldn't want your kid to drink this. You wouldn't be able to eat your pasta without this. Just really simplistic type of communication. We then developed it a little bit more. We became more graphical. We became more ornate. We liked using different types of type fonts. And this is closer to what we are today. We've actually just recently gone through another branding session. So we've actually got a whole new brand, which is based on this, but it's, again, a bit more mature. What's unique about Charity Water is the investment in creative. We have an entire creative team that sits in New York of about 10 people, graphic designers, videographers, who sit behind us, who basically ensure that anything that we work out that's put out that has Charity Water's name on it looks really good. And we spend a lot of time with our brand partners, currently working in the UK with big ones like Uniqlo and Aveda and Samso. And we will spend a lot of time as an organisation working with them to ensure that anything branded and content driven looks good, that we've kind of approved it. It's a bit more of a longer process, but it's all about our brand integrity. So, what's the story? I'm going to show you a couple of different stories of examples of campaigns and things we've done and storytelling moments to give you an idea. So this one we did for World Water Day in 2018.
Dear Charity Water, I saw your video on my dad's iPhone. I decided to give some of my money I have earned to give clean water to people who need clean water. I do not want people to die because of water. Love, Nora Shana Jackson, age 6, first grade.
Nora doesn't see differences in people, and from a very early age, she's been very social and wants to be in on the action.
Nora is full of life and full of love. She wants to help people and animals, and she also wants to live life to the fullest.
So this is the guy that works with Charity Water that I saw in the video, and then this is me, and I'm holding a basket full of money, and then these are cups, and then this is water.
I think it was my brother actually shared on Facebook the video that kind of tells the story, you know, of the founder and his story and why he started Charity Water and what makes Charity Water different. She was really affected by, you know, seeing the little girls carrying the cans, and especially she was affected by the thought that women were breaking their backs getting dirty water.
I think it's really bad to live with bad water. Charity Water has been traveling around the whole world to make wells and give people access to clean water. When I heard that we could maybe donate some of our money, I wanted to donate some of my money. So one night, I actually made that decision, sitting in my bed before I fell asleep, and I was like, should I or should I keep my money or should I give some away? So that I was like, I think I should give some away.
And the following morning, Nora came out for breakfast and had her little wallet with her, and she pulled out money and set it on the counter, and she said, this is what I want to give to Charity Water.
If everybody gave $8.15, there would probably be more than 1,000 wells in India, Ethiopia.
A small act can mean the world to someone else.
I gave $8.15 because I wanted people to stop dying.
Stemmed out of Nora quite literally putting $8.15.
What if you gave $8.15 too?
Jumping out a bit. So we literally got sent this in an envelope, and we're so digital that we actually don't take cash. So really stood out to us when we received $8. But what I think, the reason I want to share this was that at Charity Water, we're always looking at what story might be available there, and seeing a supporter that made that conscious decision, and $8 meant a lot to her because she's not got much money, she ate herself. And that was the whole point of it. The significance was in the fact that she'd given everything that she had, and that was her making a difference. And that's something that we really love to empower people with, is the idea of it's the combined effort. It's us all coming together. And again, it goes back to that hope in our values, that positivity, that going, hey, you don't have to give a lot to make a difference. That's how we can really come together. So that's Nora's story. A little bit more of a serious one. It's about a 13-year-old girl called Leti Kitos from a small area called Amos in northern Ethiopia, Tigray. And she, this tree, Scott was out visiting the fields once, and he got told this story, and then went out and found the relevant tree to, because he found it a very powerful story, and he used it a lot in his presentations to compel people to understand the seriousness of the issue. So Leti Kitos, 13, was traveling to and from her local water source with a pot, similar to this. And she went out one day with a friend, went to the water source, came back with the water, split off from her friend, and then she didn't come home. No one really understood. Anyway, later on that day, a man found her actually hanging from a tree. She had killed herself. And there was her broken pot was in the bottom of the tree. Now, it was quite clear that her pot had broken, and she was so shamed and so scared of the thought of going home that she felt the necessity to kill herself, which is unfathomable. Let's be honest, none of us would ever think about that. This is her mother. And we went out to Scott heard this story, and we went out to her community to verify the story, to make sure it was true. But it's a very sad one, it's a very serious point, but a 13-year-old young girl feeling the necessity to take her own life because she had dropped the vessel that meant so much to her community and to her family, had a real poignancy to us. And we just thought that was actually a really important symbol. So the tree is actually one that we keep in a lot of our assets, that we keep in our office, because yes, we are all about positivity. Yes, we're trying to encourage people here. But actually, the tree for us symbolizes the importance of why we do this every day. The importance of how the symbol, like the pot, is really integral to people's humanity and being able to live in our day-to-day. So that's an example of a more serious one, which we tend to use more anecdotally to tell our story. This is one called Just Like You. Just Like You, we ran a quiz at one of our galas, and we had gone into another community within Ethiopia, and we had basically created a spreadsheet of all the different people, what ages they are, what backgrounds, what they valued, what they were interested in, because what we wanted to do was sit down our donors at this fancy gala, get them to take a quiz, and find someone just like you. We were really trying to make that human connection between that guy who works and lives in Ethiopia and that guy who lives in San Francisco, and making people realize, when you strip all of it back, we're all human and we all have the same values. We all care for our families. We all want the best for our children. We're all interested in certain things. And it goes beyond where you were born and what you do on a day-to-day. And this worked really beautifully. We got everyone matched up very individually and specifically at this gala with these events. 2015, we ran a 9-minute immersive VR session for all 400 people at our gala, where everyone at the same time, we actually broke a record of having 400 people watching VR at the same time, were watching a community who didn't have water getting access. When the drilling rig came in and did the first fouls of water, you saw 400 people cheering. As they're coming out, they're all tears streaming down their faces. Now, it's important to note that at our galas, we do not do any kind of gift in kind auctioning. We don't give you a week's stay in some Russian palace to donate. We do all of our donating purely on the power of the story and the way that we embed that into the night. With this one, we saw a record $2 million dropped in donations within the last 10 minutes after this VR. It had that much of a communal effect on people. They were so taken in by the story that they compelled them to give, and they weren't getting anything for it. This year, just gone, we did a whole gala about repairing of wells, broken but not forgotten. And we started off with giving moments, starting with Scott saying, okay, if everyone gave $11 right now, we would solve one well. And everyone can go, yeah, all right, I can give $11, that's like £9. And that's really nice, and that's how he builds it up each night, each point during the night. And that's, again, a good example of where the storytelling and taking the digital, mixing that in with the in real life and saying, this is how you can help make an impact on a small level, and then it gets bigger and bigger. And then you have people going, well, I'm gonna sponsor a whole community. And you're like, great, that's fantastic. That's how we reach those record numbers within those sorts of things. And this is just an example of a September campaign. Every September, Scott's birthday is in September. So we have always done a campaign around that. We've moved away from it a bit more so now, but this is just a fun example of something we've done.
Listen, you wanna jump rope? Jump rope. Jump on a trampoline. Jump into ice cold water. Jump off that thing. Because this September, we want to bring clean and safe drinking water to 50,000 people in need. And you can help. You can do anything you know how to do to change the lives of people from all around the world. The craziest thing we can do is nothing.
I really enjoy that one. I just think it's fun because we are so set in our ways, I think. Certainly in the UK, I think there's a really traditional outlook on what it is to fundraise. You know, I think we're all, you know, bake sales, roller banners, bunting, and I think that's what we are always striving to do, is to think of different ways in which people as a community, as fundraisers, can make that money, whether it be growing a beard, shaving a beard, doing a marathon, whatever. It's just about trying to put things on its head a little bit. Another thing that's integral to us finding good, authentic stories to tell, we have a Slack channel purely dedicated to supporters we love. And if we ever hear a story as a fundraiser from our digital comms community, we all put it into one place so that we all have a shared area where we're A, continually telling each other all these good news stories. So if you're a bit low, you go, our supporters you love, and you're like, well, that's why I do this. But it's a really nice place to sort of keep sharing assets. From a social side, we have one Facebook page, we have, Twitter, one Instagram. And Instagram, we really focus on the stories of the field and our fundraisers. That's like, it's quite a clear identity within those two groups. We're really ensuring that we're not kind of muddling up different kinds of stories. It's very clearly like supporters who've gone above and beyond, and then personal stories of people out in the field. And then we have one Facebook group. where again it's an ability for people to come together as a community of charity water. It's a great place for us to find volunteers, etc. Okay, so I think I'm just going to end with one little other really quick video, and then we'll see.
That was incredible, and I think as glamorous and beautiful as it looks, I think that the concept, the idea of having that library of stories that you can dip into for the right audience, for the right moment, for the right environment is hugely powerful. Now we have, because you were so on time, thank you very much, we have a little bit of time for questions. So if you want to stand up and go line up at the Mike, if you have any questions, come on, somebody's going to have a question. Excellent. And if you can just give your, yes, just line up. We'll just do it as a supermarket checkout. And if you can give your name and the organization you work for, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, hi. So my name's Hannah, and I work for a small national UK charity called NACOM. So we work with refugees and people seeking asylum. And I just wondered, in the kind of quest for sort of digital storytelling, innovation, impact, authenticity, how do you sort of manage safeguarding working with people who have lived experience, especially as a kind of international charity?
Yes, I think, our creative team works very hard in the field to, pre-prepare, so that we're not just going into a community and saying, oh, we're just going to take some photos of you and do that. We actually safeguard mostly through our grant partners, and we organise most of it through them because they're all on the ground and they are eyes and ears in the community. And so we'll often, if we say we're going into a community, we say, okay, we'd like to come to this area, says our partner. Who do you think we should talk to in order to do X, Y, and Z? Because then they've got someone from their leader of their village who's coming in and introducing, and then there's that sort of trust by association. They also know about us in the terms of the fact that they've seen our work throughout the ages. And then on the literal content gathering, it's a slow process. You know, we're going in for 2 weeks at a time to get two stories. It's pretty heavy duty to lift to get one of these projects and stories together. But it's just ensuring that you're asking the right questions and that they fully understand through the translators exactly what it is that we want to do with the story. But I think stepping back from the sort of detail of that, our values and isms are really clear about respect. We're not ever trying to show people without dignity. Imagery, we will never cover someone's face with an image with type. So we have these quite core values of like, we always gather the names and the family name of the people we take photos of. So that's all part of the process. We're not going in and snatching a picture, we very much have a conversation. And we say, who are you? And that's how we get our stories. Because if you're just going, great, you're missing something.
Yeah.
So we'll very much sort of start with an individual, be like, who are you, what do you do? And we have an amazing creative director, Tyler, who is phenomenal at this. And he has just a very personal relationship with people. He's a very good way of getting close to them. And just listening. And then going and doing content. So there'll often be, like, as part of the project there is talking.
Yeah.
So it's got that piece down there.
Sure. Now, I think just as a kind of moving on, well, not moving on, as a bit related to your point, you know, a lot of charities do, I mean, we certainly do struggle with empowering people to tell their own story in their own words. Yeah. And obviously we have our kind of aims as a charity and it's how to strike that balance. But thank you. That's really interesting.
I will not show away from the fact that in water, we're very lucky with our cause in many respects. It's very black and white, clean, dirty, the issue that we're dealing with and we're speaking to. And it's something that affects everyone pretty equal measure. If you've not got access to water, you've got pretty much the same economic issues going on. Something like refugees, education. There are so many different types of issues that will sit under that, and the 360 of it is much more complicated. So I will definitely say good luck. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I'm Melissa Kirshen. I work for a charity called Glassdoor. We run homeless... Yes, that's right, yes. But I've lived here for 19 years, so I kind of consider myself a bit of both. So I love that you've got your values clearly defined and your brand clear, and you have a certain look, and I think that's all beautiful, and I'm envious of all the wonderful resources you have. And I'm curious about your business model, actually. So you talked about how 100% goes to frontline work. Clearly all this is not frontline. So you said this is pretty much all done by the well. Okay, so how can I talk about, like, when you're fundraising, you're obviously fundraising for frontline, but then how do the two sides of the organization?
So we have two strands to our key relationships team, yeah. And we have the key fundraisers who are going out. So you've got massive events. We've got a monthly giving program for the spring. We've got MyCW, which is our fundraising platform where people can create their own fundraising campaign, or like Just Giving or Virgin Money Gives, on our site, and then you get reporting in. So you've got the mass audience there. Then you've got your key relationships. So we've got people who can afford to give £8,000 or more, and they are sponsoring an individual water project. And that goes and links back into the transparency. It's that we're going through an inventory list of projects so that people have this really concise understanding of what project they're giving to. So you've got key relationships, people who are dealing with that type of giving. So you've got mass water, you've got high level of water, and then you've got high level operations. And there is a well team who specialise in going to those people. I won't be around the bush. We go to the Reed Hoffman's LinkedIn. Yeah. We go to the Silicon Valley. And a key part to our story was that Scott, 2 years in, he had $200 in the ops bank account, and he had $1 million in the water. He does such a good job of explaining the 100% model, and then had no money. He was like, I'm about to close with $1 million in the bank. So he wrote 3 letters. One to Mark Zuckerberg, didn't get back to him. One to Twitter, and one to, everyone remember Bebo? To Michael Birch. And Michael Birch wrote back. And he, in the very early days, he dropped $1 million into that operational bank account.
Okay.
He coded our very first website, and he introduced us to the Silicon Valley. And because of the way that he had been, Scott had set us up, we were of interest to the tech community, who had not, till this point, been offered the type of charity giving that sung to their values, that sat with the way that they think about them, that had that foundry angel view.
Yeah.
So I think because of the way that Scott had elevated his idea of what charity water was from the beginning, he ended up being put into conversations with people who already are thinking at that level. Mm. So we've already created, we have products off the back of that. We've got the Pool, which is one of our newest products, which is purely for founders of companies who, before they IPO, they can donate a value of their shares. So we've got shares in WeWork, Casper, Uber, and we will get their stock, and they will translate into operational.
And that goes into the front line, or that goes into the... So what, can I ask you what this percentage is in terms of, like, how do the two, if you've got $1 million here, what's the amount of money that you would need to do the branding and the beautiful back-end work to do?
We need a revenue of about 2 years' worth of revenue in the operational bank account, and we're very transparent. The best thing to do would to go. Be send you the finances. So
yeah,
you
just right curious balance. To, what the right balance is. I mean, it's wonderful you can say it's 100%, but, like, what are the resources that are really needed to... Yeah.
Millions.
Yeah.
I can get you the exact figure. I don't know. But last year we've brought in about 3 million for operations.
Yeah.
But we need that purely to ensure that the 100 people who work for Charity Water can keep going.
Keep doing it.
And that their livelihoods of 100 people in New York and London, there's 3 of us in London, by the way, can keep going. So they worked the idea of a 3-year plan. But this year, 13 years in, is the first time that we have confidently been able to say that if we never got an ops donation for the next 12 months, we'd be able to pay our staff for 2 years. So that's a big thing, and that's what Scott does every day. He's ops. Like, he's all well, because that's the only way that we'll get that kind of cooperation. And we're looking at how, there's a longevity issue here.
Yeah.
I'll be very transparent. We've got to think about what happens when Scott goes. How do we grow out of stuff for Scott and his story? And so there is a big debate about what that looks like. It's working really well at the moment. We've had some amazing well investors and angels. Mm.
It's really interesting. Thank you for that.
Last question.
Hi.
Oh, sorry. No, that's the last question.
Oh, thanks. Yes. It's really hi. Hi. You can hear me. I'm Kat Thorne. I'm running a charity called the Commonwealth Education Trust. And I'm reading Scott's book at the moment. And it's brilliant. And I'm on a mission actually to turn what was a fairly sort of traditional organisation into an innovative organisation, both in terms of its intervention but also its funding model. Cool. And that's partly because I found it really hard to tap into traditional funding. Mm-hmm. So I think you've answered some of the other questions I had about the model. I really like the model of finding, so we're building a founders club for the first time. But I just wanted to ask, what would your tips be on where we're starting? Because we're right at the beginning, despite being a well-established organisation. Sure. Our intervention is called Teach 2030, and it's about bringing long-term professional learning to teachers in schools. Okay. So where we've got a situation at the moment where we've got almost all 10-year-olds in low-income countries can't read a basic book, and that the teachers are the most impactful resource in classrooms, but we're not investing in teachers. We're giving kids computers, and we're building wells, and we're doing lots of other important things, but actually we need to invest in that one resource that's always there. But it's quite a hard story to tell, as you were alluding to, compared to water. Like teachers, there's lots of other influencing factors in a classroom, even though the teacher is the most impactful. Have you got any tips about how to share that story in a powerful way?
For me, my initial reaction to you is I'm like, distill your priorities. Just so that when you ask them to a crowd, that you can very easily tell them what it is that you guys do. And I think you see this a lot with lots of charities, is they're doing so much good, and but they're like, oh, we've done a bit of this, a bit of that. And it's just like, whoa, what do you do? What is your main aim? And actually, I think that's where it goes back to the values and isms, which can seem quite wishy-washy when you're first like, let's sit down and work these out. But actually, if you can hold yourself to them and create some core pillars of how you're going to work, and say, okay, fundamentally, we want to make sure that we're working with these mainstays. These are the three focus areas that when you stand here, this is what we do. We work in bringing tech to kids, or like having bite-sized ways in which you communicate that, so you're not having to go into the nitty-gritty. See what I mean? Like having a more succinct way of communicating it, work out what that looks like, and then having those values of how you're going to approach people about that. Because I think a lot of what we do is about our pitch, right? You guys would agree, like, it's like, oh, Jaguar, that's really nice, I'm here, kind of thing. That, you know, it's kind of as simple as that. Work out what it, your story is, get some good content. I cannot stress to everyone enough, like, if you've got good content, I'm lucky I have a big, big folder of content that I can just dip into and run around in from, you know, lots of beautiful high-res images that you just, by having that source, if you've got all of that there, everything you're going to do looks nice because you've got the content to start with. And I think a lot of charities, especially ones, you know, more traditional ones, they, content is like an add-on. It's like, oh, and we'll have a photographer there. It's that kind of, but if you're thinking about it the whole time, like how are we going to tell this story? And think about everything as a storytelling moment. Again, it can sound quite American, but it really helps you to kind of frame the way, I think that it's improving and succincting the way that you tell that to people is how you're going to get more interest. Because it's not that your thing is important.
No,
you're getting lost in the, like, what? You do what?
Yes, thank you.
I'm going to be around for a bit if anyone has.
Can we please give Ellie a huge round of applause?